Every 24-hour day is a tremendous gift. Is this something that you feel? I feel like sometimes I can see this. Maybe all of us sometimes go in and out of understanding this, but every 24-hour day is actually a gift. It's an opportunity to practice generosity. It's an opportunity to show up for our family, our friends, our communities. It's an opportunity to practice being present so that we can uplift ourselves, but not only just ourselves, but the whole community, this world. We can look around the world right now. There's a lot of fear. I don't know if you've been noticing that. Has it been happening to you? Right? Like there's a lot of fear in the world right now. And so we have the opportunity every 24 hours to bow to that and keep moving forward towards wisdom and compassion. What a beautiful thing to do. So that every 24-hour day is a gift to us. And then from Thich Nhat Hanh, so I have Thich Nhat Hanh for us tonight too. He said, we should all learn to live in a way that makes joy and happiness possible. Isn't that beautiful? We should all learn to live in a way that makes joy and happiness possible. We can do this. You can do this. I can do this, right? We can begin our days by making an offering, or maybe just coming back to our intention to be present, to practice showing up, to practice the cultivation of wisdom and compassion, to practice the cultivation of this quality of metta, of friendliness, to practice an open-heartedness, maybe open-hearted listening to your friends, to your loved ones that are in fear, or to your own heart when you're in fear. So we have this opportunity every day to begin to show up. And we have these wonderful teachings of the Buddha. I mean, it's really actually quite stunning that they're handed down teacher to student through the millennia. It's quite amazing that we have these teachings that we can learn and that we can practice. Not just the learning, but the actually practicing. We listen and we take it in and we start to practice so that we can have more happiness, more freedom, more ease in our lives. So we have the practice of mindfulness, which is just remembering to be present, to do what you're doing while you're doing it. It's actually quite simple, right? Do what you're doing while you're doing it. It's really a practice of intimacy, intimacy with yourself and intimacy with the world. Intimacy with self, intimacy with world, with our practice of mindfulness. Mindfulness is part of the Buddhist teachings. It shows up in so many lists. It's really, in some ways, you could say the cornerstone of the practice. And we can keep again and again. I love this word practice too. It's a practice, not a perfect, right? You know, again and again, however many times that you need to, you can start again and practice being present, to be intimate with yourself and intimate with the world, doing what you're doing while you're doing it. So mindfulness is, first of all, the ability to recognize what is happening in the present moment. So just to notice, like, oh, we're sitting down and we're meditating and we might have the idea, which is a concept, it's a belief or a view that when I sit down to meditate, I shouldn't think, or I should be really peaceful. Look at those other people. They look really peaceful, right? Those are just ideas. They're just concepts. And we're practicing with our mindfulness. It's first of all to recognize what's happening right here. So sometimes we might sit down and meditate, and there's a lot of worry. Or maybe there's sometimes when we sit down and meditate, there's a lot of peacefulness. Or sometimes when we sit down and meditate, there's a lot of restlessness that can happen to me, right? Like that feeling of being like ants in my pants. You get that sometimes? Like, oh, right? Or maybe sometimes when you sit down to meditate, there's grief, grief for this world and fear for this world. And we're practicing showing up for the whole thing. Grief is like this. It's like the parts of ourselves that are, how to phrase this, the parts of ourselves that need to be held can be held in our attention. So sometimes we sit down to meditate and we're holding ourselves in our grief, or we sit down to meditate and we're holding ourselves in our anger when anger arises. So we're holding ourselves in it. We're not indulging it necessarily, nor are we repressing it. It's this ability to be intimate with what's happening. It's a simple recognition without judgment or criticism. Oh, this is a big one, huh? Every time I teach meditation, mostly when I teach beginning things, every time somebody will say, and they'll be kind of sheepish about it, like, oh, I have a lot of judgments. I have a lot of self-criticism. I'm like, oh, join the club. I'm in that party too, right? It's part of being human. Not everybody has it all the time, but it's pretty common. It's not so personal. It's something about our culture, our conditioning. I'm not quite sure. And so maybe sometimes when we sit down to meditate, we might begin to notice, acknowledging, oh, the judgment is like this. So the mindfulness is a simple recognition without judgment or criticism. So when the mind is criticizing or complaining, we can just notice that. I wonder if somebody has unmuted themselves by mistake. Sometimes the mute button gets, yeah, there we go. Sometimes when I'm teaching, somebody will raise their hands like on the Zoom by mistake, so the little buttons can get caught sometimes. Anyway, so mindfulness is this practice which we practice when we sit down to meditate. But in theory, it's not just about being a great meditator. It's like we're practicing, it's like we're building muscles. It's a metaphor. We're not literally building bicep muscles, but like this metaphor, right, of building the muscle of mindfulness, or you could say the habit pattern, because it is a habit. Like, this is really great news, actually, because our minds work by habit. And sometimes we have some unwholesome habits or some unhelpful habits. And mindfulness is this habit that's so supportive. And the more we practice it, the easier it gets to remember to be present. So when you get angry or depressed, it's the same. We can just recognize what is here without any sense of disapproval or rejection. So in our practice, we're not making war with ourselves. Like, oh, I should be different. That's a concept too. That's an idea. I should be different, right? Instead, we're just seeing what's here. There is no battle to win or lose. This is, in fact, our mindfulness meditation. It's not about being a good breather. I'm confident you're a good breather. You've been breathing for some many years, right? But we're practicing recognizing what's here, being intimate with it. So you don't have to struggle against your desires. We can just be aware, like, oh, desire is like this. Sometimes when I sit down to meditate, I don't know if I should tell you, but I'm going to tell you. It's a secret. Shh, don't tell anybody else. I'll sit down to meditate and I just have so much longing. And it's like, oh, I'm just longing. I'm not even sure what I'm longing for sometimes. It's just this sense of like wanting or longing. And I can just hold it. I don't have to pretend like it's not there. I don't have to indulge it, which might be, I don't know, to get up out of the meditation and go to the fridge and eat chocolate or something, right? Right, like that sense, and that's a sort of funny example. But when we're sitting, we're present, like, oh, longing is like this, depression is like this, anger is like this. So we don't have to struggle against ourselves. So mindfulness embraces and includes things like fear or desire or longing. It recognizes with great tenderness. Does that seem like a tall order to love those parts of yourselves that you think you're maybe not supposed to have? Right? But it's part of us. And our mindfulness can hold it like a parent holding a child. And I realize this metaphor maybe doesn't work for everybody if you have or had a hard relationship with a parent. So I'm talking in a metaphorical sense, right? Like a parent holding a child, or maybe you could switch the metaphor in your minds, like the dog owner watching the doggy at the beach being the doggy or something like that, right? Like this sense of recognizing with great tenderness with what's here. So your bad habits, they are also you. They're part of you. Therefore, you must treat them with great tenderness and non-violence. Your bad habits are part of you. So it's like we invite the highest and best habits of ourselves, of wisdom and compassion and care, to hold the habits or those parts of us that are like shame or grief or depression or rage or desire. Because those better parts are, it's so funny how to find language that's not placing a hierarchy. But this sense, right, where our love and compassion, we're training that in with our mindfulness to hold those parts of ourselves that need to be held. Because really, I think all of us have parts of ourselves, like the screaming 2-year-old or the angsty teenager, and we're holding all those parts of ourselves with our quality of attention that's friendly and warm. So we begin with recognition of what is here with our mindfulness. And then we add our concentration, our focus, so that we can look deeply into the nature of whatever is arising. And then we might begin to see like all those habit patterns, like when I sit down and I have longing, I might, if I didn't look super closely, I might think, oh, I have so much longing. It's really who I am, and I'm always like this, and I shouldn't be like this. Like all these concepts and stories come up. But actually, when we start to focus our attention, which just means paying attention like sequentially, right? Like if you're going to eat an orange, if you're going to eat an orange and actually focus on the orange so you can taste it. So we might eat an orange and the mind will wander. And then we're not actually tasting the orange. So the focusing of the attention is really just this paying attention. And in some ways, it's not terribly different than the mindfulness. They come together because it's hard to be present if there's no focus. I don't know if you've noticed that. My phone is a great source of distraction, and but I can't be present if I'm distracted. And so in this way, mindfulness and focus come together. So our focus, we have our mindfulness, which recognizes what's here. And then we add focus or concentration so that we can look deeply and begin to see the nature of what is arising, which is impermanence and change and not self. So looking deeply leads to insight. It leads to wisdom, and wisdom liberates you from all negative tendencies. In everyday life, just as you do not do violence to your breathing, or right, in everyday life, you mostly don't do violence to your breathing. Do not do violence to your body or to your anger or to your depression. So the positive elements in you, they are you, and the negative elements within you are also you. And it is necessary with our practice for the positive elements to acknowledge and cradle the negative. If you do that, a transformation will take place. Do you have experience of that? Do you think that's true? Have you noticed that for yourself? So if there are things that are causing you to suffer, you have to know how to let go of them. So I have a personal story. Let's see, January, maybe January into February, I was looking at my finances and the prices of everything was going up, and I got really stuck into a pretty big spiral of fear and scarcity and worry about money. I don't know if you can relate to this. Prices have been going up, right? It's like no joke. But maybe money's not an issue for you so much, but maybe you have a health thing, or maybe politics, something that you might loop on. So my mind started looping on this. Every friend, oh, what's happening? Oh, I don't have enough money. I have to make more money. What am I going to do? I might have to move. Like the stories, like every single. And then I also developed a special rant about how ridiculous it is, how much the prices were going up, and the grocery stores, they're just really horrible. Like, anyway, I don't want to get started on that rant because it's not where I want to go. But I had a little rant. Maybe you have like a little self-righteous rant about maybe not money, but could be something else, right? Like this thing. And I was really suffering around this because it was pretty constant. The thing about how our mind-body system work, that Nama Rupa, is that they are interrelated. So the mind was looping as in fear, but it was also in my body, right? They're connected, they're not separate. So I was suffering, I was probably losing some sleep over it, but because I am devoted to this practice of mindfulness, this practice of intimacy, I was investigating it. I was noticing, not 100%, the whole thing's a practice, not a perfect, but enough to begin to focus and actually feel the suffering, right? I felt the stress and pain of being so caught in the story about not having enough. It was so painful. I was feeling it and I was looking deeply. I wasn't just sort of pretending like I knew it. I actually let myself feel it. And that sense of having the parts of myself that know love and compassion to hold myself within that. And I start to see like actually I was causing my own suffering by choosing to be afraid. It wasn't just an idea. Like we hear this idea, like, oh, if you let go, it's going to make you happier. You probably heard that. You've in a Buddhist group. You probably heard that. It wasn't like that. It wasn't an idea. It was actually, I was feeling it and I was looking deeply and I could see, oh, hold on. This is unnecessary suffering. I don't have to do this. And it let go. It wasn't like I decided to let go. It wasn't like I pried my fingers open. It just let go. It was like I had grabbed a hot pan and I knew it was causing pain and I just let go. It was very spontaneous. It wasn't a willpower thing. It came from looking, right? It came from being present with the suffering of it and looking deeply into it and seeing like, oh, I'm telling these stories. I'm going on this self-righteous rant. I'm telling these stories and it's leading to my own suffering and I let go. So the other day I was walking with my husband and he's very susceptible to poison oak. And there was a stick, like a very beautiful looking stick. You know how when you're walking, sometimes you like to pick a stick up off the ground. It can be your walking stick. But it was lying in what looked like to me a little bit of poison oak. But he reached over and grabbed the stick. And I looked at him and I was like, poison oak? And he just dropped it. It wasn't like someone told him that he should let go and it's going to be really good for him. It was more just this immediate, oh, that's suffering, and I let go. So that letting go process comes from being with the suffering, looking deeply, and then the letting go. There's so many ways that we can support ourselves with letting go. So many ways. I'm sure you know them. Coming to a weekly sangha, going on retreats, doing a yoga class, going in nature. Like so many different practices we can do to support the letting go. So that it's not about a willpower thing. It's about putting the conditions in place. All of us have so many influences. We're influenced all the time. Maybe you're being influenced right now by coming together in this group, but you're probably influenced later if you're scrolling on social media or what TV you watch. So we have so many influences all the time. And the influences that will support us for letting go include listening to Dharma, practicing meditation, going in nature, Tai Chi. I mean, so many things, right, that can support us. Maybe a good Dharma friend, like a good heart Dharma friend, can help with the letting go. Looking deeply with our mindfulness. Thich Nhat Hanh, I told you I was going to talk about him a little bit tonight. Thich Nhat Hanh, he recommends actually placing, he said, if you're overcome with an emotional storm, that's a little bit like getting caught in the fear around money or fear around politics or fear, right? We get caught in an emotional storm. He recommends, I think this is an excellent idea, that's why I'm telling you, to place your attention around your navel for 10 to 20 minutes and feel the movements of the breath. So, right? Like, oh, an emotional storm. That's the mindfulness recognizes an emotional storm is here when it's here, when it arises. It's just like the weather, right? Storms come and storms go. And how can we support the letting go? We place the attention, as his advice, at the navel and feel the breath for 10 to 20 minutes. I highly recommend trying this. It's an excellent endeavor. It might really support you, right? Like that sense of holding yourself in the friendliness as you do this. So are you able to let go of things? If you're not able to, your suffering will continue. So with my story with money, like there are things that I needed to do, right? I needed to work on my SEO and I needed to teach a little more and there was stuff I needed to do in the real world, but really my happiness and your happiness is not about getting the real world to line up how we want it to be, but actually to let go of whatever is causing us to suffer. So when you have an idea that is making you suffer, you should let it go. So like for me, the idea was that groceries should cost less. I mean, maybe they should. It sounds really logical to me right now. Actually, I told you, if you got me started on the rant, I'll go again, right? But the idea that groceries should cost less, that actually causes me to suffer. It's just an idea. It's a belief. It's a concept that groceries should cost less. They actually cost what they cost. That's what's happening. And the idea that they should cost less causes me to suffer. So it's a concept. So many ideas and concepts get in the way of our own freedom. So I have been thinking about this a lot recently, and it's come into my practice. And I recommend this too for you to notice when concepts and ideas are coming up, and is it true that they're causing suffering? So first of all, we have to define what a concept is. So a concept is just, it's an idea that stands for something else. So love is a beautiful concept, right? But it's an idea. Your idea of love might be different than mine. I might have a concept or an idea about myself, or let's give an example. Like I have a concept of my husband. We've been together for 25 years now. So I have this idea. He's like this, but I have to tell you, that's just an idea. It's not really necessarily how he is all the time, or maybe even most of the time. That's just an idea. It's a concept of him. I could tell you my ideas about him, but that would not be the same as meeting him in person. So it's just a concept of him. He's like this. Does that cause me suffering? Sometimes, yes. Yeah. If I have an idea about how the person is, sometimes we have ideas about ourselves. I'm like this. And it causes suffering. So my invitation, your homework, if you want homework, if you choose, is to notice, to explore concepts and see if they actually block your intimacy with being present, if concepts cause you to suffer. I really actually want you to investigate this rather than take my word for it. I think it's an interesting investigation to start to notice as you go through the day. And I know some of you probably have enough of a mindfulness practice that you could just slip this in a little bit. Oh, I'm having a concept about what should or shouldn't be happening, or a judgment, or an idea, or a belief, or a view. And it's blocking my intimacy. I have a friend who says, let's see if I can quote her, Kim Walker. She says, judgment is the place intimacy goes to die, right? And judgments are that. They're just concepts. They're concepts about what should or shouldn't be happening. So we can train ourselves to let go of our ideas about things. And we might, as Thich Nhat Hanh talks about, learn to drink tea with 100% of our being, or listen to a loved one with 100% of our being, or to hold ourselves in compassion when we have the suffering, because feeling the pain of the suffering actually is what helps us learn to let it go. It's this really interesting thing. So, with our mindfulness practice, we can begin to wake up to the marvelous reality of life. It's all of it, right? Life is hard. It's true. It's hard sometimes. We get stuck. We get stuck in our rants and our depression and our grief, but it's also actually really kind of amazing. I mean, the ocean. Have you seen the ocean recently? Or maybe just a tree outside your house? It's really marvelous. Or that you have a loved one with you. Or that there's a beautiful cup of coffee or tea because it's evening time, right? It's, we can, with our practice, begin to wake up to the marvelous reality of life, and that our happiness isn't something that we're going to get later once we follow all the mindfulness instructions. It's available right now in this moment, right? It's available right now. So this worry for me about money, I have to, like, if I'm honest with you, it's not 100% gone, but I have so much sense of ease and freedom around it. Like, it's not as pervasive, and I'm not as stuck to it as I was in the early year because I saw how much suffering that was causing me. And then it's again and again, I can practice. It's not a one and done, this letting go thing. It's not a one and done. It's a practice. That's why we call it a practice. We can keep practicing and we can start to familiarize ourselves, like, oh, this is what suffering feels like, and this is what freedom feels like. Because I have to tell you, it is a great joy. It's a great joy to be not so caught up in worry about money. It's a great joy. And in this way, maybe you have something that's really weighing on you, and you can notice when the clouds part, when that letting go process has happened, and you can notice that freedom. Because when we start to notice what it feels like, it's a beautiful thing. We can start to train ourselves to recognize it, to be familiar with it, that sense of freedom. Okay, let me check my notes and see if there's anything else important. So freedom is not something you get later. I think I was just saying that. The only place for freedom is right here and now. Right here and now. And mindfulness is the stuff from which, or I would say the habit pattern from which that freedom can arise. And when you have an idea that is making you suffer, you could consider the possibility of letting it go and entering into a sense of freedom from your own concepts and ideas. You can train yourself in this way to be present. All right, that's what I have. Let's take a little pause and see if it settles and see what lands. You can discard what doesn't land. Okay. And then I just wanted to leave it a little space if there were anything anybody wanted to say. Anything anybody wanted to say, offering. Deborah's got her hand up already. Go ahead and unmute yourself, Deborah.
Okay, so I have been almost laughing out loud throughout this talk. Thank you, you're a blessing, and I love you. It's as if you've been sitting on my shoulder watching my life for the last couple of weeks, and then you made up this talk to help me feel better. I so totally love the example that you gave. I, in the last couple of weeks, have had two very scary medical things pending that I have to pursue. A lot of doctors and CAT scans and this sort of thing, MRIs, very scary and expensive. And the thing about the presidential election is torturing my brain. And then, yes, the cost of food and gas, and then I just had a $300 increase monthly in one of my things. So it was like, oh, you know, the anxiety and and I could not quiet down. I just couldn't let it go, like you're saying. And just recently, in the last several days, I've been, when it gets really strong, just putting my arms out like this in front of me, as if I'm holding this bundle of anxiety-ridden nishigas. And I have to remember that there's no catastrophe here. I have resources of, you know, whether it's my knowledge or my finances or my willfulness or whatever it is. So this idea of holding it, you kept talking about that, and I just loved it. It made me smile from ear to ear because I'm actually literally, you know, making like when you cradle a baby and holding this and breathing, just remembering to not only inhale, but exhale, and putting my hand on my heart while I'm doing that. And I'm so grateful the way you talked about all of this tonight, especially about just being mindful without judgment. That's the tricky part. I love you. Thank you. You're wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Deborah. You know, I love how timely the Dharma is. Have anybody else noticed that? It's like every time it's exactly what we need to hear. It's true. It's true. Did anybody else want to speak? Yeah, Mary Kelly.
I just had a quick question. Could you repeat the quote that your friend Kim Walker said?
Oh,
It just
yeah.
cracked me up,
So,
and I thought that's a good one. It's a good one. Yeah.
she said, judgment is the place intimacy goes to die.
Okay, that was what I couldn't think of where to say, and I thought, yeah. And in so many realms. Thank you so much. Yeah, great.
Anybody else before we get to our meta?
I could say something if we have time.
Yeah, please.
So
Yes.
it's not my story, but I'm going to tell it anyway.
And it's kind of a sad story, but it has at least a decent ending really quickly. I read a article about an executive at CNN whose husband had just died of pancreatic cancer, and she was writing an article, beautifully written article about all the things you shouldn't say. And one of the things she said was that people would say, "It's so unfair." And as a journalist, she said that she gave up on things being unfair the second major shooting at a school, right? She said, but she had an even more insightful thing that she got from her grief counselor. So apparently, when he was diagnosed, they knew he was going to pass away. So they went right away to a grief counselor. And this grief counselor said, instead of thinking of things as fair or unfair, which is kind of like the battle of reality over not reality, right? Like what you're talking about. And instead of thinking things in those terms, the grief counselor said, just think about what is the hand you're dealt right now. And it just, that helped me so much to just see it written down in writing that, like, it doesn't matter, fair, unfair, whatever the case may be, whatever, as something as terrible as pancreatic cancer or, you know, whatever the case may be, this is the hand we're dealt, and just dealing with that instead of trying to wish it was different. And so I just thought that your talk was so amazing. It just really reinforced what was said in that article about just facing the reality of what you have instead of, because it's more painful. And what good does it do, fair or unfair? Her husband is still buried and she still has two kids, you know? But fair or unfair, what about just dealing with the hand you're dealt, with everything good and bad that you're dealt, you know? I loved that article. It was really good. I wish I could tell you guys more about where I saw it on CNN somewhere, but it was just really hit home for me. And thank you for your beautiful talk, Ashley.
Yeah, thank you, Isabel. Thank you for sharing. That's beautiful. And then Jan, and this will be the last one. Jan, do you want to unmute yourself and share?
Yes, I'm a storyteller. I know I tell stories to myself, and I was wondering if there were any questions that I could ask myself that would separate out that this is just a concept. This is just an idea, because while I'm in it, it feels like it's reality.
It does, doesn't it? It feels so like that, right? Like it feels like it's real and true. So I think just asking yourself, like, is this a concept? Like you can even go there, like, is this a concept? Just begin to notice, like, is this a concept? And then the other thing you can ask yourself, which is a teaching from Byron Katie, which I don't know if I can remember all four questions right now. Byron Katie has four questions that she calls the work. So you could look this up. You know, it's called The Work by Byron Katie. She's
Yeah,
got four.
is it really real, that one? Yeah.
Yeah. Is it true? Is it absolutely true? And who would you be without this truth? Something I can't, I knew I wasn't going to remember all four, but you can look her up and she can, it's really helpful to start to work with the stories in our minds. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.